Thank you, Bernard. We're going to start with your presentation. We had three this morning, and I will ask all the speakers that they have 10 minutes, and will be 5 minutes for the audience to make questions. And at 9 minutes, I will rise, or Lisan will rise this paper, that should be green. And in 10 minutes, I will rise it again and become red. So that will be the end of the talk. So Lisan, please.
So the first student of this session is Natalie Bedard. She will be presenting mouse lacking the USP2D ubiquitinating enzyme, have severe male subfertility associated with defects in fertilization and sperm motility.
Good morning, everyone. So today my talk is going to describe a deubiquitinating enzyme called USP2 and its role in sperm motility and fertility. The ubiquitin system is divided in two parts. The first part is the specific attachment of ubiquitin to a substrate protein, and that's achieved by the concerted action of different enzymes. And depending on the type of a linkage or a chain attached to the substrate can even be targeted for degradation by the proteasome, or the chain can also confer different functions such as endocytosis. The other part is removal of ubiquitin, and that's achieved by deubiquitinating enzymes, or DUBs. And among the functions of DUBs, they can recycle ubiquitin after a substrate is degraded, or it can also reverse ubiquitin by removing ubiquitin on a substrate that is non-degraded. And this way, DUBs can rescue substrates from degradation or can also reverse some of those functions. USP2 gene is encoding two distinct isoforms that are generated by alternative splicing. They both have an identical core region, but they have different end termini, and it's thought to dictate their localization and substrate specificity. The two isoforms are both highly expressed in testes and induced during spermatogenesis. And by immunohistochemistry, we can see that both isoforms are induced in late elongating spermatids. So because of those interesting features, we were interested in characterizing the role of USP2 in spermatogenesis. So we did so by generating a USP2 knockout mouse using a Crelox method, where we inserted LOXP sites surrounding these three exons where the catalytic site cysteine is present. And by crossing these mice with a mice expressing ubiquitous recombinase, we were able to generate a whole body knockout of the two isoforms of USP2. And the first obvious thing we wanted to look at is male fertility. So we mated those males with normal females, and we can see that the knockouts are generating much fewer litters compared to the wild type over the same period of time. And also they have a decreased average litter size, generating very few pups compared to the wild type, and showing a very strong decrease in fertility. And we know that this is not due to a problem in copulation, because when we looked at vaginal plugging, we can see that the knockouts have percentage plugging comparable to the wild type. Then we wanted to confirm the fertility defect, and we mated the wild type and knockout males with superovulated females, and then the number of fertilized eggs were counted. And we can see that there is very strong decrease in fertility, very few fertilized eggs generated by the knockout. So at this point, we wanted to know whether this problem in fertility was due to a problem in sperm production. So we looked at different features like, and we can see that the knockout male have normal testes weight. They have normal testes spermatid counts, and also normal epididymal sperm counts. So we think that the fertility problem is not due to a low number of sperm. And we wanted to confirm this by doing some histological analysis. So we looked at wild type and knockout testes sections. And we can see that in the knockout section, they have a normal epithelium, normal organization, so normal spermatogenesis. However, we noticed occasional presence of multinucleated bodies in some of the tubules. However, these were not very frequent and unlikely to be the cause of the subfertility. We can also see that the shape of the knockout sperm looks normal. So we think because there's no structural defect, we wanted to look at any functional defect. And the first function we looked at is the sperm motility. So we isolated wild-type and knockout sperm and did computer-assisted sperm analysis. And we can see that after incubating those sperm into normal culture media, we can see that the knockout sperm retain motility very similarly to the wild type, being motile even after 4 hours of incubation. We can see also it was normal in all the descriptors that were measured. So they don't seem to have any defect in motility in normal media, but we wanted to know whether these sperm cells, if we challenge them by measuring motility in more demanding conditions. We repeated the CASA experiment, but this time we incubated the sperm into PBS, so in absence of any ions or energy source. And we can see that the knockout sperm, they lose motility very rapidly, being almost all immotile after 30 minutes of incubation, whereas the wild type, they were still motile even after 2 hours of incubation in PBS. So it seems like there is maybe a problem in motility, but only in certain conditions. Next, we also wanted to know whether these sperm cells have a defect in fertilization. And indeed, when we performed in vitro fertilization, we can see that the knockout sperm have a 75% decrease in fertilization capacity compared to the wild type. And this fertility defect could be bypassed by injecting directly knockout sperm into oocytes and showing that the knockout are able to fertilize the eggs when they're injected in it. So we wanted to know at which step of the fertilization the defect is. So it could be at the level of the dispersion of the cumulus cell layer. It can also be at the level of the zona pellucida, either binding or penetrating it. It could also be at the level of the acrosome reaction or at the level of the fusion with the oocyte plasma membrane. So the first thing we looked at is the cumulus cell dispersion. And we can see that when we incubated knockout and wild-type sperm with normal egg masses, we can see that knockout sperm were able to disperse cumulus cells very efficiently after 40 minutes. So there is no defect at this level. Next thing we wanted to know whether there was defect in zona pellucida, either binding or penetration. And to answer that, we repeated in vitro fertilization, but this time using oocytes that were free of their zona pellucida. So we can see that when incubating knockout sperm with those oocytes, we can see that they are now able to fertilize those eggs. So this is suggesting a defect in binding or penetration of the zona pellucida, and it's also excluding a defect in fusion of the sperm with the egg plasma membrane. Next thing we wanted to look at is the acrosome reaction. So we isolated sperm from knockout and wild type, and we induced acrosome reaction by adding progesterone after capacitation for 4 hours in vitro. The acrosome was then stained with Komasi blue, and the cells were counted. And we can see that knockout sperm are able to achieve acrosome reaction normally. So From these results, we concluded that the defect might be at the zona pellucida level, either binding or penetrating the zona pellucida. As a summary, we saw that USP2 knockout mice are viable and grossly normal. However, the males have a severe subfertility phenotype. We also saw that the USP2 knockout sperm lose motility very rapidly in PBS, and that the knockout sperm have a defect in fertilization, and that must be due to a defect in binding and or penetration of the zona pellucida. And as a conclusion, it is known that the penetration of the zona pellucida is dependent on sperm motility. So we think that the defect in fertilization and the defect in motility that we saw in these knockouts are probably related. And finally, the work that I presented on USP2 knockout mice is providing the first genetic evidence for a role of the ubiquitin system in fertilization. In the future, we would like to characterize the fertility defect by determining the ability of the knockout sperm to recognize and bind the zona pellucida, and to determine whether it's at the binding or the penetration of the zona pellucida. We also wanted to characterize the motility defect by determining which factor can restore motility of the knockout sperm in PBS by doing supplementation experiment. And finally, we also would like to identify substrates of USP2 in testes or in sperm. And finally, I would like to thank people from my lab, Marie and Yao Ming, and the precious work of our collaborators, Dr. Sear, Dr. Clark, Dr. Chien, Dr. Ermo, Dr. O'Flaherty, and Dr. Smith. And thank you for the organization for giving me the chance to present this project. And thank you all for your attention.
Thank you, Natalie. And now we can ask a question for her. Please use the microphone because we are recording.
Amy Ryan, do you know in the, in the testes overall, is there an increased rate or is higher level of ubiquitination then if you've knocked this enzyme out?
No, we looked at overall ubiquitination using Western blotting with anti-ubiquitin antibodies, and we didn't see any difference.
Dan Bernard, I promise not to ask a question at all of the talks, but you can, you know, I'm the last one, so there is opportunity for payback. So I'm curious as to why you think the phenotype, although robust, is not fully penetrant. So you still do see some fertility. Mm-hmm. And I recall another talk from the lab that suggested that USP2 is involved in circadian rhythmicity. Mm-hmm. And you might be aware, I know that these cells don't have active transcription, but there's recent work suggesting that you can have rhythms in cells that aren't actively transcribing, for example, red blood cells. So I just wonder if you've considered that there might be some differences between individual sperm in terms of their phasing and intrinsic rhythmicity that might explain your variability in terms of fertilization in vivo.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if a sperm have a circadian rhythm. However, I know, I think it's not fully penetrant, and I think the fertility is only, there's only a small window of age, I think, where they are a little bit fertile. I don't know if, you know, at this point they have a little bit more motility or, I'm not sure about the circadian rhythm.
Thanks.
Bernard Albert, your very, very nice presentation. Your data suggests that, in fact, the cell surface of the sperm may be affected in terms of how it's going to interface with the zona. And, have you stripped the membranes and done a gel to see whether the sperm have different membrane components?
No, we haven't done that yet. That's interesting. We haven't thought about that, but
I'll bet you'll find differences.
Sorry?
I'll bet you'll find some differences, because
yeah.
That's where your data seem to be heading, and the ability to, the idea that ubiquitination would affect the proteins that are processed and come to the cell surface could make a lot of sense.
Yeah, could be. Well, we think it's more of maybe a motility defect, because both of them are related, the penetration of the zona and the motility.
Thank you, Natalie. So now we move to the second.